WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we're talking about the race for district attorney in Prosecutorial District 6. That's Pender and New Hanover counties. Since 2004, the office has been held by Ben David. Back in 1999, David was hired by then-DA John Carriker, a Democrat who handpicked David as his political successor 5 years later when Carriker abruptly announced his retirement halfway through a four-year term. There were political grumblings, particularly from Republicans, that Carriker had tried to subvert the lowercase d Democratic process. But David had a tough campaign. He first faced three other Democratic candidates in a special primary election, and then Republican Jennifer Harjo in the general election. Harjo lost in a tight race by just over 2 points, and would go on to open New Hanover County's Public Defender's Office, one of the first in the state. And David would go on to win 5 uncontested elections in 2006, 2010, 2014, 2018, and 2022. Last year, David announced he would, like Carriker before him, retire halfway through his term. But the timing was slightly different. While Carriker resigned at the end of July, David's retirement took effect on the first business day of September, and that changed the shape of the upcoming election. While back in 2004 there was a special primary election, this year, due to the timing of David's resignation, candidates for the Republican and Democratic parties were chosen by prosecutorial committees of each of the state parties. And both parties chose a prosecutor currently working in David's office. Democrats nominated Rebecca Zimmer Donaldson, a member of the well-established Zimmer family. Born in Wilmington, she served as a prosecutor in Kings County, New York, perhaps better known as Brooklyn, before returning to work in David's office 4 years ago. Republicans nominated Jason Smith, a retired U.S. Army captain who has worked in David's office for 14 years, including many years running the day-to-day operations in Pender County. Earlier this week, Governor Roy Cooper appointed Donaldson to serve as interim district attorney until either she or Smith wins the general election and is sworn in to serve out the final 2 years of David's term. That kind of appointment can be beneficial. Carriker himself was appointed back in 1995 to replace disgraced DA Jerry Spivey. After Spivey was caught using a racial slur at a Wrightsville Beach bar, he earned the ignominious distinction of being one of very few DAs ever removed from office in North Carolina. Carriker, who brought an understated calm to the office, helped soothe that scandal and was re-elected in 1998 and 2002. But an appointment isn't always an anointing. While Carriker recommended David for interim, then-Governor Mike Easley appointed someone else instead. And, of course, the real benefit of appointment to a vacant position is name recognition, and it's not clear if 2 months as interim DA before the election will give Donaldson a definitive boost. Now, it's worth noting here that while district attorneys' elections are technically partisan and there is always politics at work, they aren't quite political in the same way as, say, a state representative or school boards. Running as a Democrat might make sense in liberal-leaning Wilmington, but David has seen consistent support across party lines in the broader, more evenly purple New Hanover County region and in conservative-leaning Pender County. Across the river, his twin brother John has served Bladen, Brunswick, and Columbus counties as a Republican for nearly 14 years. And while John's prosecutorial district is far more conservative than Ben's, it's hard to map traditional political ideologies onto the way they've run their separate offices. But that's not to say DAs are politically inert administrators. They're often political animals. And Ben David, in particular, has gone above and beyond his elected office, exerting influence everywhere from the General Assembly to local community conversations. And while DAs are sworn to uphold the law and prosecute those who break it, they also have a lot of discretion, which, over time, can sort of take the form of precedent. Take the prosecution of cannabis offenses, which Ben David has steered towards treatment and probation instead of prison time. Or New Hanover County's pioneering use of H&I courts, a reference to lower-level H&I felonies, which, with buy-in from victims, defense attorneys, and prosecutors, can be dealt with through guilty pleas quickly and without a trial. So, in short, we're talking about a powerful, very influential office, a position that has an impact not just on the dozens of prosecutors and staff that the DA oversees, or the thousands of people who go through court every year, but on the broader community. And that office is, for the first time in 20 years, truly up for grabs. All right, well, we need to take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll be sitting down with the two candidates. First, Democratic candidate Rebecca Zimmer Donaldson, and then Republican candidate Jason Smith. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. We're here now with Rebecca Zimmer Donaldson, Democratic candidate for District Attorney of Pender and New Hanover County. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So before we get into the nuts and bolts of the office, I'm hoping you can just give us some sense of your background and your time at the DA's office.
Absolutely. So I grew up here in Wilmington, was born and raised. I graduated from Hoggard High School. I then went off to college in Florida. I graduated from the University of Miami. And then I went to straight into law school at American in D.C. Right out of law school, I was hired by the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office in Brooklyn, New York. So I served as a prosecutor there for 5 years. It was the second largest office in the country. We had 600 prosecutors just in Brooklyn. So it was a large office. From there, in 2020, I came back here, back to Wilmington, with my husband, who was a law enforcement officer in New York City. We had just had our second daughter, and it was right during COVID, and it was kind of the perfect transition back home. We always knew we wanted to raise our daughters here, and so it, you know, was a perfect opportunity. And position opened up here at the DA's office. So I jumped on that, and I stopped working for Brooklyn on a Tuesday, and I started working here on a Wednesday. And I've been doing that for a little over 4 years now.
So for the last 20 years, for people who have been in Wilmington, District Attorney Ben David has been more or less synonymous with that office.
Yes.
And with all due respect to his tenure there, I'm curious, you know, what things do you think you would do differently?
That's a great question. So I think Ben has laid an incredible sort of foundation of what it is to fight crime and work to prevent crime. And always the focus of the district attorney's office is going to be to fight crime. That's what we do. We prosecute criminals. But I think we need to have a larger aspect of what we do focused on preventing crime. And so that's where I want to focus a lot of time and energy, is these low-level crimes that are people just continue within the system. So if we think of somebody who has a substance use disorder, they've got an addiction to something. They, you know, could be arrested for possession of, let's say, crack cocaine. When they run out of crack cocaine and they run out of money, they might break into a car. They then might sell an item that they got in that car at a pawn shop. So they might be obtaining property by false pretenses. And it sort of just is a revolving door to feed that habit and that addiction. So my focus really is getting onto the root causes of crime and figuring out what we can do to prevent crime from happening in the first place. And I think that is treating people's addictions. And when we do that, I think we have a safer community and a better place for all of us to live. So that's really where I want to focus a lot of attention, because I think that is going to reduce crime in our community.
I'm curious, how do you feel about the way our district attorney office right now is using plea deals and things like H&I court? Because some of the concerns I hear from actually two sort of opposing concerns. One is that they feel like the courts are sometimes too lenient, too many people getting plea deals. And on the other hand, I hear concerns that there is too much of a backlog, too many people waiting for their day in court for more minor offenses.
Yeah, so, I mean, two concerns I've also heard as well. H&I courts have been an incredible instrument that we've been able to use here in New Hanover and Pender Counties. I believe they started here in New Hanover and Pender Counties and are now going to be in all of the other counties because they've been so efficient here. H&I courts, so for people who don't know, those are low-level felony cases. It could be small amount of drugs. It could be a felony larceny. It could be low-level embezzlement. So those go into one courtroom where there is one prosecutor who handles those and really gives sort of the state's best plea offer that they're going to possibly get. And that is early on in the stages of a case. So the thought process being, if we can get this resolved quickly and efficiently, then that is the best use of everybody's time. We are holding defendants accountable. You know, in cases where there is restitution owed to victims, we get that restitution back. So it's sort of a win-win for the state and for the defendant, who is going to get a less harsh sentence than if he were to or she were to go forward on the case. And we call it sending it upstairs or sending it to the felony prosecutors. So it really is an efficient use of court's resources. We get a lot of plea deals done there and a lot of cases moved there to prevent the backlog that we're talking about. Our higher level felonies don't go through that court system because those cannot be resolved early on. As long as we have victims on board for the H&I court, and we always, you know, we have Marcy's Law, which requires the state to confer with victims at an early stage and talk to them about a potential plea offer. So if we've got every party on board, the H&I courts is really a great use of time and resources and just the court system in general. As far as backlog, you know, we do see a backlog in higher level cases. And a lot of times, you know, sometimes that is the state, sometimes it's defendants, sometimes it's defense attorneys. And unfortunately, there's not enough court time to handle all of these cases. And, you know, for example, we saw in the True Colors case that was supposed to go to trial a couple weeks ago. You know, the defense attorney, I think they, one of them was having back surgery. Another one left the office. So those cases are starting from the beginning. A brand new defense attorney is now going to be assigned to those cases, and they have to have the opportunity to get up to speed and to learn the case, speak with their clients, speak with all the victims, all the witnesses, you know, go through the phone dumps, go through all of this voluminous discovery. So it's going to take time. So I think the H&I courts are really helping reduce the backlog, but obviously there is still going to be a backlog with these high-level cases for one reason or another. But if we can, you know, stay on top of those, continue to work hard and put, you know, trials in front of juries as often as we possibly can to keep courts running, we're going to efficiently get through that backlog and continue with hopefully more recent cases. For example, I was in Pender County last week and I tried a 2022 rape. So not incredibly old, it was about 2 years old, and that's should be the standard.
So one place where Ben David has exercised some sort of policy discretion that I hear about a lot is the sort of de facto decriminalization of cannabis.
Okay.
So the story he tells all the time is that if you've got two teenagers standing in the woods and one is smoking a traditional tobacco cigarette and the other one is smoking a cannabis joint, it's the kid who's smoking the Marlboro who's actually going to be in more trouble. How do you feel about how the DA's office is handling cannabis crimes? I mean, it's still a law on the books, but you guys have some wiggle room. What's your opinion on that?
So, you know, as of right now, it is still on the books. And as, you know, a prosecutor, our job is to enforce the laws. You know, the legislature really gets to enact those laws. And I think it's important when we take an oath to uphold the law that we, you know, don't get to pick and choose what laws those are. Now, if somebody is guilty of possession of a small amount of marijuana, you know, could that look different as far as, you know, we're not going to be asking for jail time on that. And that I can tell you confidently. But what justice looks like for different types of cases is going to be different. So, you know, could that be stay out of trouble for a year and that case will be dismissed? You know, that's a reasonable outcome for that kind of case. So they are still on the books. We still have to enforce them. But what the ultimate sentence looks like is where I think the discretion of our office needs to be.
So along those lines, you mentioned, you know, stay out of trouble for a year. And earlier you were talking about getting to the root causes
right.
of why some people are behaving in a criminal fashion.
Right.
So right now there are a number of court initiatives, Safe Baby Court, Veterans Court, Substance Abuse Court. I know the names of some of these have changed a little
yes.
bit.
Yes.
Ben David has played an outsized role above and beyond what the DA does in sort of promoting these and working with judges. What's your sort of sense of the importance of those courts and where would you like to see them go?
I think they're vital. I think they're vital to our criminal justice system. I think they're vital for the community and for people who are suffering. So right now in New Hanover County, we do have a number of different treatment courts. We've got the Veterans Treatment Court, like you talked about. We've got a drug treatment court. We've got a mental health court. I want to see those better utilized and more utilized, and I want to see them expand to Pender County. Right now, Pender County does not have any treatment courts. So if somebody is in possession of a small amount of crack cocaine in New Hanover County and, you know, it's determined that they've got an addiction, they've got a substance use disorder, we can put them in treatment court. And ultimately, if they complete treatment court and are successful, we can then either dismiss their case or, you know, agree not to send them to jail. There's a number of things we can do. Somebody who is in possession of a small amount of crack cocaine in Pender County doesn't have those same options. We've got to work to get those. You know, I think a lot of people that we see in the court system are not healthy, whether that is physically, mentally, emotionally. We've got to figure out what their needs are so that we can prevent them from coming back to the courts. And I think our treatment courts provide a huge benefit for us to figuring out what those root causes are. So I would love to increase our use of treatment courts and start them in Pender County.
One of the things I hear about the current DA's office is, as I've mentioned, you know, Ben David has gone above and beyond what a DA has to do
right.
by statute. Whether that's, there's been many times where he's been in the room in community discussions about drug abuse, gang affiliation, community safety in general, even education. That's a lot on top of the role of DA. Is that a level of, you know, engagement that you think you're up for? And is that something you think you would want to pursue as a DA?
Absolutely. I think that part of it is so important. You know, 2/3 of our jail population didn't graduate high school. So we've got a problem here. If we can keep kids in school, we're going to prevent them from going into jail. At least that's what the statistics show us. So I think a DA needs to push to keep kids in school. And figuring out what we can do to support kids, to support parents, to keep their kids in school. Because ultimately, if kids are educated, if they have good, well-paying jobs, they're not going to turn to crime. And so I think being involved in the community, and a lot of what Ben David does is trying to prevent crime from happening. And I think that's what a lot of these community engagements are, whether it's education, whether it's treatment courts, whether it's you know, a number of different things, working with the faith organizations to figure out what can we do to keep our kids busy and safe. So we know kids that don't have a lot of, or that, you know, are busy with school, with activities, with volunteering, with jobs, they don't have time to get into trouble. We know that, you know, their brains aren't fully formed until they're in their 20s. So we can't expect them to make the best decisions or decisions we would hope that they would make. So if we can provide some structure and keep them busy and involved, I think we reduce a lot of the problems that we have.
So my last question is about the culture of the office. Because as I said, Ben David's been the district attorney for 20 years. And I think from my experience, my reporting, a certain, you know, culture has evolved along with him at that office. Do you see that changing when he leaves, and how do you handle keeping, you know, morale up, keeping that sense of camaraderie such that it exists right now?
Yeah. So Ben's done an incredible job, you know, making sure that we take care of ourselves and that we take care of our families. And he's a big advocate that if you're not keeping it real at home, you're not going to be able to keep it real when you're at work. And I hope to continue that. You know, I've worked in, you know, the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office, where it was very much like you needed to be there 6 days a week. You know, if you were leaving by 7 p.m., you were leaving early and not doing your job to the fullest extent that you were able to. And then to see a huge change when I came here, where your boss valued your personal life and where you were expected to value your family and your personal life, that is something I absolutely plan to continue. You know, I hope that the members in my office will see me as the second best boss they've ever had. Ben's going to be a hard one to follow, but I hope to take all of the good things that he has taught us and really continue those on. You know, there is some shift in the office because both of the candidates, myself and the other candidate, are from within the office. So there is naturally some pull there, but I don't think that is anything that can't be repaired.
So anything else you would want voters to know when they go to the polls about you, about the DA's office, about why you think you're the best choice for that role?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in this community. My family has been here for multiple generations. I'm invested in this community. I care tremendously about the safety and well-being of every member in this community. I am doing this because this is my life's work and what I care about and what I'm passionate about. And I hope to do what I've done over the last 9 years as a prosecutor and standing up for victims and being their voice in the courtroom on a much larger level as the district attorney. I've got the experience, I've got the courtroom knowledge, and I've got the willingness to serve and to lead. And I hope voters will remember that starting October 17th for early voting all the way up to November 5th.
All right. Well, Rebecca Zimmer Donaldson, candidate for district attorney in New Hanover and Pender Counties, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Ben. This was a pleasure.
All right. Well, we need to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a few moments with Republican candidate Jason Smith, also running for district attorney in Pender and New Hanover County. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. We're here now with Jason Smith, Republican candidate for the District Attorney's Office of Pender and New Hanover Counties. Jason Smith, thank you so much for being with us.
Ben, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to come here today with you.
So before we get into some of the nuts and bolts of, you know, how you would run the DA's office, I was just hoping you could just give us a little bit about your background as a prosecutor.
Sure, sure. Oh, well, I'll give you my background just generally. I've been practicing law for 23 years, 14 of it in the DA's office. So I was in private practice before. Wasn't feeling that it was necessarily my calling or fulfilling. How about that? And Ben and I knew each other through our children. I have four kids. He has three. And we knew each other through that, and just in passing, really. And he said, hey, come and join the DA's office. And it was honestly, it was a very frightening career change because I was not a litigator before. Really didn't step much in the courtroom, didn't have to. I did tax, business law, estate planning, really don't have to go to the courtroom. So I started in the DA's office in 2010, all right? And he brought me in and I started at the bottom. At this point in time, I'm an 8.5 year lawyer. It was kind of humbling to start at the bottom. At the time, I was out of the Army, because I was in the Army Reserves. I was a combat veteran, spent 15 months over Iraq, Kuwait, back and forth. And you have this sort of this vision of yourself, and you're like, oh, I should be conquering the world. So I come to the DA's office, and you know what? I'm not conquering the world. I'm starting at the bottom. District Court, if you know what District Court is. So District Court and working with a prosecutor had been a prosecutor for only maybe a few years. And so it was kind of humbling, but it was enlightening because that's where you learn your skills. So that's, and Ben said, that's what, what's, when you come here and you're going to start at the bottom and you're going to do this, you're going to learn your skills. So in 2010, I started down in district court. 2011, I move up to Superior Court in Wilmington. And you know we have two jurisdictions. So I started in New Hanover County and worked my way up to Superior Court and then handled, you know, things, property cases and drug cases, and started dabbling into gang cases, and started doing homicides later. And you still got to cut your teeth and improve yourself. And then in 2014, from 2011 to 2014, I just grinding it out in the courtroom because you have to learn your skill. You do it in district court in front of a judge, and you're learning how to really do your job. But then when you get upstairs to Superior Court, you're really learning how to talk to a jury, present your case to a jury. You know what? And it's not just going to jury trial. It's how do you look at a case? How do you analyze a case? What does justice look like? And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, but what does justice look like? Not everything is, you know, we're going to get a conviction, conviction, conviction. Justice may look like a dismissal. Justice may look like a probationary sentence, conditional discharge, something like that. So that's where you learn to cut your teeth, and that's what I did, was cut my teeth there. Then in 14, as you may be aware, back in that time, you had specializations in the office, and we still kind of did. And I wanted to do certain types of cases and sort of spread my wings, and a position opened up in Pender County. And I went up there, and it was myself and another DA, and that was it, two DAs up there. And we were both new to Pender at the time. I kind of was asked to, hey, run the day-to-day operations. And I did that for 9 years. And handling then up there, you're handling at times, I mean, there's a few years there, I'm handling every single felony that went through Pender County, from little small cases, to like small drug possessions, to murder. So I was able to spread my wings, able to gain experience in being in charge for the day-to-day. Look, Ben was in charge. His main concern was make sure you're not making a fool of yourself or our office. You represent yourself in our office wisely, and I'm here if you need me. So that's where you kind of learn the management skills. You learn to talk to then heads of law enforcement, the sheriff, chiefs of police, higher ranking, you know, chief deputies and such, and the detectives there. Because in Pender, they're calling you about everything. It could be, hey, I have a speeding ticket and I wrote it wrong. What do I do? And I'm like, or hey, we've got a dead body and I need you out here. And that's what I did for a little over nine years. And then I came back in December of 23. So
I want to sort of start at the broadest possible level, right, when it comes to running the office. Mm-hmm. Because for the last 20 years, you know, Ben David's been the district attorney. He's become synonymous with the office. I've spoken with many district attorneys over the years. There's a lot of similarities in how they see things, but they all have their own particular style.
Right.
So
right,
with no disrespect to Ben's tenure as DA, are there things you would do differently as,
sure,
district attorney?
Sure, as everybody would do different. So Ben has been a good mentor in how to run an office, especially this. You know, we have 50, on a good day, 53, 54 employees. 20-something of them are attorneys. The rest of them are legal assistants and such. So as to what I would do different, I've noticed over the years, and we've been good with efficiency, but I think we can get better. Things like case age for top-level crimes, homicides, maybe some sex cases, some of those cases that are complex in investigating, so it takes a while, complex in prosecuting, so it takes a while. And as you're getting those complex cases, you're also getting everything else. So at times you put them to the side. They're not ripe. Maybe the defense isn't ready. I believe that we can be more efficient in taking care of those. Three years or longer to take care of a murder case, too long. Have I had those types of cases? Absolutely. There's ways I think that internally, the public may not see it, but internally, I believe that we can do a better job about case assignments on those types of cases. And that will flow down to then allowing the younger DAs to sort of cut their teeth on more generalized cases. And so you're not as so much pigeonholed. because people get frustrated. I don't want to do property crime for the rest of my career. So, all right, so let's do more generalized for the younger ones who need to cut their teeth in front of jury. So that's one. The second, let me tell you, Ben has been you know it. I think the whole public knows it. He's been great at mentoring and being the leader in the community who spearheads everything, the DA generally, right? He decides, all right, we prosecute this, we don't prosecute that. Or, hey, this is sort of a policy, if you want to call it that. Or, hey, here's our position. He's been good at that. I will continue that. Could it be better? I'm sure it can. I'm going to try to do, what he's done and exceed that with reaching out to all segments of the population, because everybody, as you know, deserves a safe place to live, to walk, to work. And, I've heard from people, oh, I wish Ben would have done this. I wish he would have come here. Okay, well, maybe we do that.
I'm curious how you feel about how the DA's office has used things like plea deals and mm-hmm. H&I court, because I hear kind of two conflicting concerns. On the one hand, I hear from some folks that the DA's office is too lenient, too many plea deals, too many people walking, the prosecutor not going hard enough on violent crimes. At the same time, I also hear concerns about almost the inverse, right? So the DA's office going too hard, or that that the docket is too backlogged.
Right.
So how do you see that balance in those tools?
That is, I hear the same thing. You're too tough on this. You're too lenient on this. Where I don't believe we're going to make everybody happy. Here's you talked about H&I. Let's start there. H&I courts. Now, we were probably the pilot program for H&I courts way back back in the years. And I believe it is good for filtering out low-level felonies at H&Is. If you know, and maybe people don't understand, in North Carolina we have structured sentencing that's set by the legislature or the General Assembly, and really we all have to abide by it, right? And it says this, it has two axes. On the x-axis is a person's criminal history, on the y-axis is the crime. So you're matching up the crime with a criminal history and coming to a block of here's what the sentencing should be. And I say should be, the only way you get out of that sentencing block is either increase a charge or decrease a charge. And it happens all the time. We have to make sure that in H&I court, we have thousands of felonies. And a lot of people don't see that. Property crimes, H&Is, financial crimes like credit card fraud and obtaining property by false pretense. And you've got a lot of those. You've got to be able to move them through. If not, you're going to clog up. We can't try every case. We can't. We have generally an assistant DA has 11 trial sessions a year. If you've ever done a jury trial, you're not trying 11 cases a year. That is tremendous on people. But we have 11 sessions a year, and so you've got to balance that. Going, if we don't offer plea offers, then everything's for trial, and that's not efficient, and that. Injustice may not, you're not getting justice, not timely justice. So you have to use H&Is. And we use structured sentencing. We look at people's records. We look at the what the victims want, because now we have victims' rights. That's kind of put a different variable in it, because on those low-level felonies, we still have to contact victims. What would you like to see? Now, we're not making everybody happy every time. It's still the DA's discretion on how to resolve a case. And under if I'm elected, we're still going to use H&Is. Matter of fact, I think H&I courts now are being used in all 100 counties. It is an effective tool. Look, are some people getting reduced sentences where they should get harder sentences? Yes. But you got to understand, for H&Is, very rarely, or even if they came in and pled, we call it straight up, or pled as charged, a lot of times the judge isn't going to give a person an active prison sentence, right? And a lot of those times, you're only looking at active sentences between 4 months to a year. So how can we better change somebody's propensity to commit crime? Hopefully probation. I mean, very rarely are they walking out of any of these courts without some sort of probationary sentence. So it happens, but for the most part, no. So it's not like they're not getting punished. It's, we can't lock up everybody. You as a taxpayer, don't want to pay, don't want to have increased taxes because now our prisons are filled up with low-level felonies and people are going, why are you locking up low-level felons, right? We hear it all the time. I hear it on drug cases. Why are you locking up people with possession of a little bit of crack cocaine? Well, it depends on the record. So that's you've got to balance. We're never going to make anybody or everybody happy, so we try to do it the best we can.
Yeah. To that point, you mentioned, you know, Ben David's sort of default or de facto policies on some of these things. Mm-hmm. One of the examples I've heard him use the most is quasi-decriminalization of cannabis. The example he always gives, if you've got two teenagers in the woods and one is smoking a tobacco cigarette and one is smoking a cannabis cigarette, the kid who chose poorly, I guess, and has the Marlboro is actually facing, you know, maybe some stricter penalties. It's not that they're completely off the hook.
Right.
But it's definitely a softer hand approach.
Well, I can tell you, people have come to me all the time. Are you going to enforce the laws against marijuana? The answer is yes. It's on the books. And some would say there's other laws on the books. Yes, but this one's on the books, and this one affects a wide variety of people. Yes, we will. Are we throwing people in prison for cannabis? Generally not. Unless you're bringing in truckloads of it. No. All right. I haven't seen a person go to prison for cannabis in a very, very, very long time, even a trafficker. However, we can't say we're not going to enforce it. Right. Because then it just gives everybody free rein to do what they to break the law and use marijuana. You're right. Cigarettes at times have been handled differently than marijuana. There's different degrees of punishments and repercussions, not necessarily punishments. Call it repercussions. A young person. What do you do with a 17-year-old whose brain is still developing and he has marijuana versus a 60-year-old who has been smoking weed since probably the 60s. You know, you treat those differently. You're not saying you're not going to prosecute it, but it's maybe it's a conditional discharge. Maybe it's community service. Maybe it's for the young 17-year-old a little bit of drug treatment, because do we want our 17-year-olds starting there? Same with alcohol with a 17-year-old. He's not getting off scot-free. However, he's not going to prison for it. He's not maybe not even probation, but we're doing something to maybe change that direction of that kid's life. So the answer is yes. People are going to say, well, I disagree and it should be legal. That's a General Assembly issue. We enforce the laws. So will we prosecute? Yes, but we're prosecuting it now. It just looks, the punishments may look different. But people aren't going to prison for marijuana.
Something I want to go back to that you mentioned, and anyone who knows Ben David knows that he has a role in public life that exceeds what you have to do as mm-hmm. the DA. Mm-hmm. That includes his work with Judge Jay Corbening, his work mm-hmm. with the Council of District Attorneys. He's been sort of a de facto lobbyist. Pushing for certain kinds of legislation.
Right.
How do you see your role as the DA if you're elected? Do you feel like you want to step into that space?
Yes. And the answer, if the DA, look, there's only a small group of people that are really responsible for the safety of our community, right? Your DA, the sheriffs, the heads of police departments, their job is to keep the streets safe. But after they make an arrest, it comes to the DA's office. So we see a lot of it. So we kind of spearhead that. We spearhead the priorities in the community. But if we stop there and say, all right, our job is to just prosecute, you know, we have a constitutional duty is to prosecute cases and advise law enforcement. We do that very, very well. But I always think of it as an unmandated responsibility, and that is for crime prevention. And I think what Ben does and what I've been doing over the years, you may not know it, it's not public. I go out and talk to schools. I talk to parents. I talk to kids. I talk to anybody that will listen about maybe the issues that are concerning our community and saying, hey, look, let's try to prevent crime. I've sat down with leaders in our community in the last year going, how do we prevent youth crime? How do we prevent gang admissions? And how do we prevent kids from, you know, doing dangerous things? I think it's a must. If we don't do it, who does? Right? And somebody will. But when we see it, we talk to victims. We talk to parents of homicide victims. Some of them are youth. Some of them were not, you know, they were doing bad things, and that's what happened. You know, maybe it's a gang killing. Maybe it's a drug dealer. It doesn't matter. They still warrant protection. And so we go out, and Ben's been great at setting the standard for the last 20 years. If he goes out and he tries to engage with Judge Corpening on youth violence and how to, you know, the school to pipeline or school to prison pipeline, right? And that's the two of them have worked that out, going, hey, how do we prevent that? How do we keep kids in school? I think it's important because that helps the community as a whole, right? And the same thing with the Conference of DAs. Everybody's going to rotate through the Conference of DAs. That's kind of a thing. Lobbyist, when it's warranted, yes. But really, here's my passion. My passion is crime prevention. Somebody has to stand in, and we see it every day. So we can say, for instance, internet safety with kids. I see up in Pender, that's what I handled mostly, murders and crimes against children. And we see some of the patterns developing with the new playground has moved to the internet, and you're seeing that people are, you know, predators are getting on trying to solicit kids, or kids are exchanging photographs, and you know, and we if we don't talk to the kids and say, hey, this is what we're seeing, or to the parents, then I'm scared nobody will. I'm not saying they won't, but the burden rests on my shoulders, I believe, at times to go out and do that, and that's what keeps me up at night. How can I prevent this?
I think the other part of that has been some of the, I don't know if you would call them specialty courts, but maybe specializing mm-hmm. courts,
yes.
things that looked at, you know, teens or veterans mm-hmm. or substance abuse
Absolutely.
Or safe baby court.
Absolutely.
Is that sort of part of your
yes.
vision for the office?
Yes, you have to. Look, if somebody's going to say, don't lock up all our people with mental health or drug addiction, then what are we going to, if we don't lock them up, we got to provide them help in some way. And Judge Faison, who's really started our drug treatment court, and it's called different things now, community recovery court's what it's called now, it works. Because when you're talking about regular probation versus a drug treatment or community recovery court probation, two different things. They're in their lives daily. And if you talk to people who have actually graduated that, they would say, that saved my life. I watched somebody come up to Judge Faison the other day, last week when we were together, and say, it saved my life. It's worth it. If we save one life through that, I think it's worth it. Does everybody like it? No. But I believe it's necessary. I'm a veteran. So let's talk about real quick Veterans Treatment Court, same thing. It's relatively new, so the enrollment's kind of small right now. But if you look at veterans and what affects them, mental health, and maybe family life, maybe drug addiction, and they try to bring that – all that to the forefront and try to help, you know, the veterans out. I think it's going to work.
I think if you've seen it in action, it's hard to make a case against it.
You can't. Yeah. You can't. You can't. People can try, but go sit down there on a Friday and watch it and see these people's lives being changed. Some fail. They do. You're going to have people fail all over. No matter what career or what court you're in, somebody's going to fail. But if we're saving a life and again, if we're not doing that, then what do we do? Again, that goes back to rest. I believe it rests on my shoulders. And I'm no Superman, but I believe when we see these people coming in and day out in our courts, in our system, and we see these names, and you're like, oh, so-and-so's here again for this. How do we help them? How do we better our community? Because I believe it betters our whole community when we have people recovering from drug addiction, mental health, and such.
Here's my last question for
you. Yes, sir.
The DA is a lead prosecutor, sort of an administrator, but also kind of a cultural figurehead for the mm-hmm. office, mm-hmm. sets the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And you've described some of the ways Ben
right.
David did
right.
that. What's your approach to the culture of the DA's office, where you've got to maintain morale, you've all these things you were talking about, where you've got, you know, prosecutors going out to the community to talk to mm-hmm. people, playing
right.
basketball with, you know, low-income youth, whatever it
right.
is.
Right. So I was in the Army. I'm a military veteran. I was a captain in the Army. I was a combat veteran. I went to Iraq for 15 months in 03 and 04. I've led troops. I understand what it means to lead. My philosophy is lead from the front. And I was like that in a peacetime Army. I am like that in wartime Army. And My wife doesn't want to hear this, but many times I volunteered. We did convoy security a lot, and I volunteered for things. And as a captain, people look at you, oh, the captain's volunteering. Why aren't you volunteering? All right? So my philosophy is lead from the front. And that's how I would run an office. And we've got 53 people that are looking to you going, do you have the experience to lead us? I've been there for 14 years, handled pretty much every type of case there is to handle, tried pretty much every type of case. But I've been a leader too. I've run an office in Pender County for Ben and was doing it every day for nine years, doing it every day. So we're a leader in a few places, if you'll allow me to elaborate. We're a leader in the courtroom, and I believe that you can't be a DA unless you're a leader in the courtroom because we've had other jurisdictions. Oh, so defense attorneys running for DA. Have you ever prosecuted a murder case? Have you ever sat with a murder victim's family and said, we may or may not win this thing, but we're going to fight for your loved one? You have to do it. I've done it. You've got to be a leader in your office, meaning this. You've got to mentor young attorneys, which Ben would send up young attorneys and say, hey, please mentor these. And we would mentor. Some pass, some fail, you know, but that's life. So you mentor and you tell them or show them how to do things. You're mentoring staff. And when you're doing that, are you able to make decisive decisions? Because the staff looks at you and say, and Ben does a good job. Here, a question is asked, can you answer it? Something needs to be done. Does he do it? Can you make decisive decisions? Same in the military, same in the civilian world, in any corporate structure, same with the DA's office. If a chief, a head of a law enforcement agency calls you up and says, I've got this, what's the answer? Because that's your job, is to advise them. You've got to be able to do that, and I can do that. That's what a leader shows. Can you do those things? And then the one that Ben has, and other DAs don't do this, but a leader in our community. So doing the extra stuff, going out and trying to say, hey, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to advise you on what we're seeing in, you know, for safety. And you're advising them to internet safety or dating safety or drinking safety or driving safety. And we do that. And I do that. I go out and talk to parents and teachers and students about internet safety, driver's ed programs about safe driving. Talk to young kids about making just right decisions. No matter who they are and what they look like or where they're from, can you make a right decision? And I believe when you lead from the front that way in all those different parts of our job, then that's what a DA does. That's the figurehead, and he's not sitting back passively going to play golf. I haven't played golf in 20 years, you know. But that's you have to lead from the front. That's how people I've learned over the course of my career is that's people follow you when you're in the front leading, not blindly. I mean, we're always going to have questions about things, but can you find the answer and can you make a decisive decision?
Well, anything else you would want to add before I let you go?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, Jason Smith, thank you so much for your time.
Ben, thank you.
All right, well, that's all the time we have for this episode of The Newsroom. Thanks to our guests, Rebecca Zimmer Donaldson and Jason Smith, and to WHQR's own Ken Campbell for technical support. If you missed any part of this program, you can find it at whqr.org or wherever you get podcasts. If you have comments, concerns, or ideas for a future show, email us at newsroom@whqr.org. And a quick note here, we're just over a month out from the voter registration deadline. That's October 11th. But you can also register during One Stop or early voting. That runs from Thursday, October 17th, through Saturday afternoon on November 2nd. And of course, that's the Saturday before General Election Day on Tuesday, November 5th. And if you'll be out of town, the deadline to request an absentee ballot is Tuesday, October 29th. We'll have much more election information and coverage in the coming 2 months, but for now, that's our show. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for listening, and and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.